and welcome to Shattered Lives, a lively, educational, and issues-driven radio show designed to tell another side of the story, to focus on and humanize crime victims, to enlighten and shine the spotlight on organizations and service providers, and to assist those who walk the path with us. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, your host, and my co-host, rather than Delilah Jones, who's unavailable this evening, we have my friend, my co-pilot, all the way from Wisconsin, Kim Colton, who's the Director of Research for our show, CrimeWire. So good evening, Kim. How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful. It's so nice to be here with you tonight. I don't often get to do this, so I'm really excited.
Well, thank you, Kim. It's always a pleasure to have you on, too. I know Delilah would like to be here, but she was busy doing a special event with Dr. Corey. So just want to give a shout-out to them and say we hope it's really going well and we miss them, but she'll be back next week. And
yep.
So by way of introduction, I just want to say a little bit about our guest. You know, this is a big change of pace from last week, and it was a tremendous show we had last week. To say kudos to Ray Bouchard, the super stellar advocate of human trafficking in the state of Connecticut, who's hard at work helping to pass legislation as well as being an author and a play in the works. So we had our show was about human trafficking and all the child porn that's showing up on Facebook. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that show or read the blog that I wrote, please do go to my site and do that because it was wonderful. As this show will be, and this will also be on the archive. So now this is a change of pace because we talk about comforting measures. And Catherine Pisacani is an advocate in her own right. She has a background in that way back when, I'm not exactly sure what year, but she was originally an English major, but she also has a degree in criminal justice. So I think helping people with respect to being affiliated with crime is somewhat in her blood, or you could say with English and criminal justice, she's probably articulate and savvy. And so with that kind of a background, I know that she'll bring us up to date on how she came about founding Project SMILE, which has to do with two things. It has to do with meeting a need for children who've been traumatized and helping first responders. And that's basically what her nonprofit in Massachusetts is about. So without further ado, let me just welcome Catherine in, and we'll get started. Hi, Catherine. How are you? And good evening, and welcome to Shattered Lives.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, it's our pleasure. You know, mm-hmm. It's always a labor of love, and although we talk about a lot of serious topics, we're pretty informal, and we like to have fun as well. So with that said, you know, you were going to be coming on last December, and the timing was such that you were rather sick of voice, and Sandy Hook shooting had just happened the night before. So, you know, Catherine, God works in mysterious ways, and we just decided that wasn't the best of times to have your show on in one way or the other. So we're so glad to have you this evening.
Thank you.
Yeah, so, you know, would you be able to tell us what, first of all, what the impetus was? I remember reading, and I actually had done a blog about your organization about a year ago because I was intrigued by it. And then I just said, well, we have to have a show with you. But tell the audience, you know, when I read you know, what brought you to this project, I just kind of, it took my breath away in terms of the particular incident that served to say, I have to do something about this. Can you tell us the background, please?
Yeah, definitely. So I founded Project SMILE, and we help children that are involved in traumatic events, children who are victims of traumatic events. And
mm-hmm.
So what we do is we partner with police and fire departments and Department of Children and Families and homeless shelters, and we donate stuffed animals and books and coloring books and crayons to be given to children. And I got the idea for the organization 10 years ago this October, and I read a newspaper article. At the time, it was on the cover of the New York Post, and I picked it up because I went to school in New York, so I still had an affinity for the New York Post and all their wild headlines. And I saw a photo on the cover of four boys from New Jersey that were starved by their adoptive parents. And it went on the story to make national headlines.
Can you say that again? There were four adoptive children who were starved by the adoptive parents?
Yeah, they had been starved by their adoptive parents. And the like one of the boys was like 14 and weighed 45 pounds. I mean, it was just horrific.
Oh,
and they were,
my
wow.
God. Kim, can you believe that?
I just can't. That's, wow. I hope they're okay today. And I hope the parents are away for a long time.
Yeah, I think the actually Oprah had an update on them a couple of years ago, and they seemed like they were in a much better place and doing well. So, yeah, I think they did go on
to
have a much happier life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so the article that I'd read, you know, talked about the children, what had happened, and it said that when the police came to the house to take the boys out of the home, one of the officers had a little stuffed animal that he had kept in his cruiser to give to a child. And so he gave it to one of the boys, and the little kid, like, wouldn't let it go, and he clung to it, and it just, like, it really helped him, and it mattered to him. And so I read the article, and I thought, you know, it would be great to have a program up in our area in Massachusetts for police to give to children. Maybe not, you know, such an extreme situation, but all the daily occurrences of police interacting with kids, whether it's, you know, children in car accidents or domestic situations or kids that are coming into the police station for variety of reasons, or kids that are victims. You know, there's so many situations.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and at the time I was working in a middle school near Framingham, and I ran what's called the Extended Day Program for the middle school, which is we did, like, after-school programming and stuff like that. And so I did a stuffed animal drive with the children in the program. We collected stuffed animals throughout the middle school. And it was such a great response. We collected, it was over almost 2,000 stuffed animals in a month, which was pretty incredible. And
wow.
And just the feedback we got, we donated to some police departments, and just such a wonderful feedback from the police officers having the stuffed animals and really finding it a great tool to have to give to children. And then we got phone calls from, like, moms who read about us in the newspaper and stuff, and they had all their children's stuffed animals. They were, like, in excellent condition that they wanted to donate. And so it just, it took off
from
there.
It just snowballed, huh?
It did,
oh, that's wonderful.
Can you tell us how that initial response, I mean, how did you get that volume of stuffed toys? Was it just people you organized in a group and they dropped them off? Or, you know, because that seems like a huge response.
Yeah, it was in the school. It was in the one middle school. And the children, we put up, I can't even remember what we did. I think we put it into flyers. It was very simple. And just the word got out. And I think we actually did a contest with the homerooms to see which homeroom would collect the most. And just, you know, kids have a lot of stuffed animals, and their siblings have a lot of stuffed animals and stuff. So, and, you know, and the idea of giving the stuffed animal a new life, and, you know, as long as it's, like, either brand new or new condition, like, they have to be absolutely excellent quality. It was just, you know, an amazing amount that came in. I had no idea at the time, like, how many to expect, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Do you have an office somewhere, or?
I work from a home office.
And
we also have
nice.
A storage unit nearby. Yes. And it keeps the overhead low as well. So
yeah.
It's been great.
Yes.
We have a picture of you online by your storage unit, by the way, with the boxes all stacked up.
Good.
So we could see you there with your tower of animals.
I wanted to ask you, Catherine, how did Project Smile start to grow then? I mean, I imagine the first year.
Yeah, I mean, the first year is, I mean, it's like any business. It's always a challenge for the first, you know, couple of years. But I started Project Smile when I was working in the school department, and then I kept, you know, going with it on a part-time basis. In the following year, which is June 2004, I started doing it full-time, and I've been doing it full-time ever since. And, you know, it takes time, you know, just, you know, reaching out to police departments in the beginning and getting stuffed animal donations. I remember in the beginning I used to go around and actually pick up donations of stuffed animals at people's homes, which mm-hmm. I haven't done that in a long time because we get so many stuffed animals in. And it's a challenge. You know, the fundraising was extremely difficult in the beginning. I mean, it's never easy. It's not easy now, but in the beginning it was very hard. But I think it was, you know, taking really small steps. I'm getting some really good kind of business advice in the beginning from people about, like, practical things about, you know, starting a business and things you need to do. And a lot of patience. I think that was a big part of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's really like a replacement for the mother figure if you can't have your mom next to you all the time, particularly, you know, children that are traumatized?
No, I don't think anything really replaces a mother, you know, in a child for, you know.
They don't.
That's,
right.
That's a huge role
but
in a child's life.
Right.
But the idea is that it's something to give to a child, like in an emergency situation, and to hold on to. And I think, you know, when we look back when we were all children, you know, I remember, like, having my little favorite stuffed animal, and I had a little toy soldier, and just little things that children just naturally hold on to, and it just can make such an amazing difference.
Yeah. Raggedy Ann was my favorite one. In fact, I think I put that in the blog that I had written before. That was my thing that carried me through 55 surgeries, and, well, of course, our homicide happened when I was just got out of graduate school, so I can't say I hung on to my Raggedy Ann, but I felt like I wanted to, you know?
Right.
With regard to the gamut of the types of trauma that you intercede with, I think you mentioned shelter. So would I be correct in assuming that there's, okay, either domestic abuse or intimate partner or family violence, neglect, some other type of trauma if there's a car of accident, some other type of separation. And I know that you do some, although it's not the thrust of your whole business, but you've started to do some with selected seniors who may have Alzheimer's and or other forms of dementia may have to be separated from their home in that for that degree of impairment that would provide them comfort as well. Is that right?
Yes, that's true. We did a program up in our area. A few years ago, we had a grant to work with the local nursing homes and provide stuffed animals for, you know, residents that were moving into nursing homes or, you know, people that didn't get very many visitors and stuff, just to be able to give them a little stuffed animal. We also did it up a few nursing homes up in the Boston area as well. Then, unfortunately, the funding for that program ran out. But so now we get funding at the holiday time to do that with the nursing homes in our local area. And we actually were out in Nantucket a couple of weeks ago doing a donation to the Nantucket Police and Fire Department and to the nursing home in Nantucket as well. And it's, you know, it's amazing, like, even for the senior citizens, and truly, yeah, ones affected with Alzheimer's and other, you know, dementia and stuff like that, or even just one, you know, people that are kind of sad and lonely, it just, a little stuffed animal was, you know, really cheers them up. And I had, you know, I remember one nursing home I went up to, near Boston, and, you know, I actually gave out the stuffed animals. We went around to the different rooms. And the and one lady was like, she was so happy to get them. And she's like, oh, what's your name, you know, asking me. And I'm like, oh, I'm Catherine. She's like, I'm going to name the stuffed animal Catherine. And it was,
that's
so sweet.
So you actually bring in, like, a big box of them when you go to a facility, whether it's a homeless shelter or something like that, and then you just, or do you check with the director first, or you just kind of go in and pass them out, you know, in a particular unit or section? How does it work?
Right. So, we always make appointments beforehand and stuff. And usually I don't interact directly with, you know, the children or very many of the nursing home residents. I mean, it just happened on that day where the nursing home was like, oh, you know, would you like to come? I think we had a Bank of America local branch that was with us at that point because they had helped collect stuffed animals. So the nursing home wanted us to kind of, you know, give them out directly to the residents. But primarily it's, you know, the people that work in the shelters, the people that work in the nursing homes that give the items, that will give the items directly to the residents.
Right.
Yeah. But
now,
I'm sorry. At Christmas time, we worked with the Boston Public Health Commission's shelter. And so they did a holiday party for the children, and they'd asked us to help with gifts and stuff. And so at that point, I got to like meet the moms and meet the children as well, and we gave the gifts out directly to the kids, which was really amazing because it was just so great to be able to see the kids and see their faces and see how happy they were to get the items, and that was terrific. Yeah.
But isn't it like a lot of other services that are provided? Like another service I can think of is if you worked at a food bank, people always think about these things, Catherine, during the holiday time. But isn't this a need like all year round?
Because, of course.
You know,
I mean,
trauma,
yeah. You know, I mean,
is there.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely. I mean, there's kids in accidents. I think in Massachusetts alone, it's like 75,000 children go to the emergency room annually for accident-related injuries. I mean,
wow.
That's... Yeah,
okay,
and we
so
have,
you also make deliveries in the ER, is that
no,
right?
No, we don't,
or?
I'm just saying, we don't make deliveries in the hospital, so I'm just saying it's like that many accidents that happen, you know, just
wow.
in our state alone, so, you know, a lot
That's
of those kids
huge.
Are going by ambulance, or, you know, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, well, and just going into foster care in Massachusetts, there's 8,000 kids, almost 8,000 children that go into foster care annually, just in Massachusetts. That's a staggering amount.
That is.
A huge amount.
How did you establish that relationship with the, I'm sorry, Kim, if you ask that question right after this. How did you establish your relationship with the Department of Children and Family? Or
yeah, we've been doing that since 2008, and we work with the Kids Fund out of the Boston office. And it's just been a great partnership. I had reached out to them in 2008, you know, explain what Project Smile was and what we did, and they were like, you know, very receptive to, I mean, you know, it's kind of like a no-brainer as well, like why would you not want to have stuffed animals and extra, you know, books and coloring books. So the idea is, you know, obviously we don't, and there's so many children that come into foster care every year, so we're not able to give items for every single child, but the idea is we're making as much of an impact as we possibly can, you know, with our resources and what we can do. Yeah, so it's just been a wonderful partnership, and it's one of the things that I'm most proud of because it's just be able to help. I can only imagine, like, how scary it must be for a kid to be taken out of their home, regardless of what is going on. It's still, like, that's their home, and that's their family, and that's what they know. So
right.
Even though if it's a situation that's a horrible situation, it's still a very traumatic experience to go through
course.
That and be put into, like, a stranger's family, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
and the idea is, like, to have a little stuffed animal to take with them. And they also use our stuff in their local offices for kids that, you know, have to come in for whatever reason, or in the interview in the playrooms when kids have supervised visits and stuff. So yeah, there's like a wide range of uses.
And how do you get the funding for this? Is it all done through fundraisers? Did children the Department of Children and Families, do they chip in?
No, they don't chip in financially. We don't. We receive all of our funding from grants, like from private foundations and individual donations. We do a couple of big fundraising events every year. Yeah, I mean it's always a challenge, but yeah.
How many staff do you have besides yourself?
I am the only one. We have volunteers.
You
at
are
help,
a
one
woman band. Is
yes,
that right?
I am.
You love it? Wow.
I do, yes. Yes.
I know of a few other people in that situation. Boy, that's not an easy thing. So this is essentially your full-time venture then, right?
Yeah, it's been full-time for 9 years.
Wow, that's sure is commitment. I know in reading about the particulars of how you set it up and whatnot, can you tell us why it's so important that, because aren't you shipping to places too that they have to be of, you know, pristine quality and certain sizes and whatnot, or things that don't make noise? Can you tell us about some of the sort of the do's and don'ts of it, Catherine?
Right. Yeah, so the guidelines are the stuffed animals, the size has to be under 19 inches, and the most important thing is that they're either new or like new condition. So it's not an opportunity for a family to clear out every stuffed animal that their child ever owned. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking for, like, really high-quality items, you know, nothing that's old or anything like that. And the idea is, like, you know, if a child gets a lot of stuffed animals, maybe at holidays or for a birthday or whatever, you know, they have the ones that are special and they want to keep, but then they have all the other ones that they don't really do anything with. you know, it's also a great opportunity for people that maybe collected the Beanie Babies when Beanie Babies are really valuable, and they kept them in like boxes and sealed bags, so they're kept in like pristine condition. But now that Beanie Babies really don't have the value that they had during the Beanie Baby craze, you know, those are wonderful items to donate. We also get a lot of donations of the Webkinz stuffed animals because the kids get the computer game code off them, and they don't really have a need necessarily for the stuffed animal. So we get a lot of those, which are perfect because they're, you know, in pristine condition, and, you know, they're just wonderful, and the size are great, and they're really cute. So the, you know, I really work really hard to make sure that we always give out, like, the best items possible because nobody wants, you know, like a raggedy stuffed animal.
You have no cleaning sanitary process. Like, you don't send them to the dry cleaner or something. That's why they have to be in good shape, right? Is that right? Do you do presentations like at police departments and hospitals and schools or whatever in terms of for the fundraising or kind of just to get the word out or what?
We don't necessarily do presentations. I do like speaking, like public speaking things, like Rotary clubs. I've spoken with a lot of Rotary clubs to kind of get the word out. And back in the early days, we used to, you know, go to different like community events that would go on, have tables at that. Don't necessarily do as much of that anymore, but I'm always looking for, you know, like speaking opportunities to like, speak with large groups. But, you know, and then depending, you know, I spoke with them, like, I don't know, like some businesses that sometimes do collections for us, and I come in and speak with the employees a little bit. So, I'm always looking for different opportunities to, like, get the word out about Project Smile, but we don't necessarily do, like, you know, like seminars or any of that kind of stuff.
Right. Or how about student interns? Do you have anybody from the local colleges wanting to assist?
We've had them in the past. I don't have any right now. I'm always looking for new interns because the interns have been, college kids have always been the best. You know, they're really energetic and committed and, you know, they've been awesome. So I'm always looking to get some new interns in here.
So they're able to earn some kind of
credit. Yeah, they've got a credit
for their curriculum, like in social work or something, or
I mean, that's up to the students to kind of figure out how, they work it with, you know, with their school, but you know, it's anybody that's interested. Yeah, social work, business skills, all that kind of stuff, because there's so much going on over here and there's so many different ways to get involved.
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah. Do you, in doing this for like 10 years, I'm sure you have a few favorite stories of something that is happening. Do you have any kind of heartwarming stories that kind of sends the message home? Other than the initial story that you first told us, I mean, that's just, you know, that's how you got started. But is there any particular child or event that kind of sticks in your mind over all these years?
Yeah, we got an email. So I usually don't hear directly from the families that get the stuffed animals. You know, it's very rare because, like, privacy and all that kind of stuff. But I did get an email a couple of years ago from a mother who she and her husband, their 8-year-old daughter, were involved in a car accident. They were, like, rear-ended on an off-ramp off the highway, and nobody was seriously injured, thankfully. But the mother emailed me because her daughter was, like, crying and was really scared and upset after the accident. Because, you know, car accidents are pretty scary. And she was saying the state police arrived and then the fire department arrived. And the firefighters gave the little girl coloring books and crayons, and then the police officer gave the little girl a stuffed animal. And the mother saw our sticker, put stickers on our coloring books, their Project Smile logo and the website. And she's like, took the time to email me, and she went home to research what Project Smile was. And she's like, you know, it was wonderful because my little girl went from being, like, really scared and upset, but then she got the stuffed animal, and she calmed down, and she relaxed, and she was so much happier. And then she got the coloring books and crayons that kind of helped, like, divert her attention away from what just happened.
Right.
And, you know, she took the time to email me. And, you know, it's just, that's, like, one small story. But you can imagine, you know, you give out thousands of stuffed animals every year of that kind of multiplied over and over again, you know? Yeah, so that was
what
just one.
What kind of feedback have you gotten from first responders over
time?
Yeah, we've
gotten, Yeah, I mean, it's always been very positive. You know, there was a number of story that I heard from Quincy a couple years ago about it was like a mother and her kids. They were home, and the mother had some issues with the father, and he was not living in the home at the time. And he came to the house in the middle of the night to like try to break into the house, and the mom took the kids and ran out the back door and went to a neighbor's house and called the police. And so long story short, the kids ended up at the police station. I think it was like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And the lieutenant that I know from Quincy was telling me that when the kids were at the station, they gave them little stuffed animals and the little juice boxes and stuff. Basically, like, the stuffed animals were like really helped the kids relax and just like, you know, really kind of made a difference in that moment, which is a pretty scary moment, you know?
Of course.
Definitely.
Yeah.
How could somebody start a Project Smile in their community?
Like a chapter, do you call it chapters or franchises?
They're chapters, because franchises, I think, is more for like businesses, but you know, mm-hmm. you pay to be in and all that kind of stuff. But the chapters.
You have chapters in New England and Arizona, is that right?
We did have one in Arizona at one point. It's no longer active right now, but we did.
Now? Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, because you get people that will do them for a period of time, and then for whatever comes up, and then they don't do them anymore. Just, you know, understandable. Just, you know, email me. The email address is on the website, and we can set something up. You just have to be able to, like, you know, collect stuffed animals, donate them to the local police and fire department, you know, obviously make sure the quality is really good, you know, top-notch quality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's very simple. We had a high school student. We actually had a Weston chapter. This is a while ago now. But the was a high school student was running it at the time, and she donated to some of the local departments and stuff, and it was great. And then she went on to college, and that was kind of, you know, the end of that because she moved away. But, it was, you know,
they pass it down maybe to a friend or to another sibling or somebody else to run it if they can't
they
do
could.
It, perhaps?
Yeah, they could.
You could.
In that case, it didn't happen that way, but, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
What kind of a time commitment is, I mean, I know, you, now, is this a over 40 an hour a week venture for you, Catherine?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah.
Yes.
It's,
well,
it's a full-time job, you know. So
that's what I'm saying. Can you walk us through? What would be a typical day? Because if someone is thinking about this and saying, I could just do this 2 hours a week, it's more than that, right?
Is there what?
It's more than just a couple hour a week venture. If you had to kind of tell them what a typical day or typical week would be, what is the real time commitment for something like this if you want to start a chapter?
Starting a chapter is obviously different from what I do because, you know, because I have to do everything. So I do the fundraising and the marketing and the grant writing and the networking.
Yes.
So there's a lot.
Lots of
it's a very different than, you know, just having a local chapter and doing, you know, one donation a month or two donations a month and collecting some stuffed animals. Like, it's like night and day. So you can't really judge, like, from what my job is to, like, what
apples and oranges there because you're wearing all those hats. Huh?
Right. You know, so my day involves, you know, reaching out to police and fire departments, you know, scheduling donations, and then depending, like, you know, going to do a donation to a police or fire department, or, you know, I spend time working in fundraising every day and a little bit of grant writing. So I try to get to everything every day. It doesn't always work out that way, as you can probably imagine. You know, some days are more like, you know, I can spend half a day working on a grant and not get to other stuff. So it's, you know, it can be a little bit all over the place. And then when we have our big fundraising events in the fall, you know, I'll spend a lot of time getting ready for those.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what about storage and like transportation with the cost of gas these days? Like, do you have a truck that you drive around
I have a regular car, thank God, because I don't want to even imagine what it would cost to fill up a big truck. Like, no. So, I have a regular sedan, which actually gets a lot of boxes in, and in places where it's not really feasible to drive them out, then I'll mail them, but it's still very expensive to mail as well. So, the car actually fits a good size donation in it. And, you know, bigger departments, we obviously donate to more frequently as well.
Now, there are there, did I read about that there are, like, drop-off centers as well?
Right now, Hopedale is our only drop-off location, but we get donations by mail all the time. I usually get donations at least 3 to 4 days a week from all over the country. It's pretty amazing.
Really? So you must have a huge P.O. box or something, huh?
Well, the post office is very nice. They hold them, you know, right behind their desk and stuff, and they never made a fuss. But then we get a lot of boxes coming in every week.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's wonderful because, you know, I mean, there aren't a lot of organizations that really take stuffed animal donations.
Right.
And then there's a lot of people that really want, you know, the kids have lovely stuffed animals and they want to be able to, you know, have them go to something where it's going to mean something.
Yeah, that's for sure. How difficult is it to actually obtain the grants if you're doing the grant writing? And does it take like a long time before you actually hear? You know, are you living from, you know, oh, I need to meet these expenses this next month. So is it you're always perpetually applying for grants, or, you know, you said you have a couple of major fundraisers, but how do you keep afloat with all of that? Is it a combination of all the sources?
Yeah, it is. It's a combination of everything. Grant work goes on all year long. Yeah, so it's a constant, you know, finish one grant, kind of start working on another one. So I'm always... You know, the fundraising never stops because it can't stop. So, you know, it's like there's always going to be expenses and you have to stay ahead. And, you know, you don't want to be running a business like, you know, week to week, not really knowing where the money's coming from.
Right. So, it's a perpetual thing, isn't it?
Yeah. It just doesn't stop.
Do you get, I'm not real familiar with the demographics in that part of Massachusetts where you are. Do you get, are there... families of are they multicultural in that area, or, you know, what if you got, you know, a family, you know, that was Muslim or, I don't know, any number of different ones? Are there different ways that they would approach, or have most everybody that you known of, are they very accepting of whatever it is that you have to offer them?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard, you know, this part of Massachusetts, you know, where Hopedale is located next to Milford, which has a large Hispanic population and stuff. So, you know, I think Massachusetts is fairly diverse.
Diverse in terms of their ethnicity.
Right. I mean, it's not obviously as diverse as some other states and stuff. But, yeah, and I've never heard feedback from, you know, anybody that having, like, maybe cultural issues in regards. I mean, it's a stuffed animal, right?
The animal is universal, then, isn't it?
Yeah,
comfort.
It is. It is.
Right,
yeah.
And they're, you know, pretty generic stuffed animals for the most part. So, you know, I think it might be hard pressed to find a cultural issue about giving a child a stuffed animal,
right?
Or a coloring book.
If you ran up against that. Now, when you go on your website, though, there are a lot of other. Now, you know, if you don't want, I mean, you can purchase some, right? That if you don't have animals to donate, but yet you want to make a monetary donation, or you want to select something else. Can you tell us about the variety of like other toys there is to choose from? And you can just click on that toy and say, "I'll pay for this," right?
So we work with it's called the Virtual Aid Drive, and
now, what's that about? Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's a program that's run through the Aid Matrix Foundation, and I became a part of it, I think it was like 2007. I actually stumbled upon it accidentally. And it's it's a way for charities to fundraise. And you have your virtual aid drive, and it's on your website. And so people go on there, and you tell them, like, what kind of items that you're looking for, like, in our case, stuffed animals. We do take donations of new toys, like, in their original package, and, you know, and books and coloring books and crayons. So if people don't have those items, or if, you know, if it's just easier, then they can go on there and they can make a financial donation. They can say, like, you know, how many items they want to buy. But then it also specifies on the virtual aid drive that the organization is getting the money directly to purchase the items that we need. Because frequently, you know, if you deal with, you know, charities, sometimes they have relationships with other businesses where we can get items at a greater discount than if somebody went and bought at a retail store.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just for an example. So, and then it's just a better way for charity to have the money to, like, use as they best need the as they best need the money. And it's been great, you know. Yeah, because when I founded the Virtual Aid Drive, I was on there, and I'm like, oh, it's like, it's just really a wonderful tool, and it looks really attractive, and it's encouraging for people to want to donate, and it's been great. And then you can also set it up with, like, a company can do a virtual aid drive, and they can have, like, a little competition and departments in their company to see, like, who's going to, you know, donate the most and stuff. And it's a great program.
Make, like, a contest out of it kind
right,
of thing.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm just taking a look at it. The aid matrix.
Yeah.
Really cool. I love
yeah.
it. What a great way to get the products. It's just fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is great. You know, can you tell us a little bit about before you did this? Like, I know that you it says in your background that you initially in college majored in English and then you have a CJ degree. What were your initial and then you said you've also worked in school, so you've done a variety of things in your life. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean Project Smile has been pretty much my only like career track job for the most part. But I did. I was an English major in college. I've always liked to write, and fiction writing was my thing. And
okay.
Yeah, hopefully
I'm
I'll get back
too.
To it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's you know, it's the thing with being an English major. Like, I never wanted to, my goal was never to be an English teacher. I mean, I taught while I was in college for a couple of semesters, but I just loved to write. And, you know, I'm always a believer you should get your degree in something that you love to do. And I
right.
think the, yeah, and I think the idea of an English major is it's also such a versatile degree because so much of what I do is writing. You know, I have grant writing for press releases, marketing materials, all sorts of things. So when you have a good
mm-hmm.
foundation with an English degree, you know, you can do so many other things with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the criminal justice came along because I went to school in New York City and then I moved back to Massachusetts. And, you know, it's always that kind of hard time, you know, when you get out of college and you're just kind of figuring everything out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
then I decided I wanted to get my master's degree because I'm like, you know, if I get it now, then it's done for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember when I was an undergrad and I was getting close to graduation and I went on a job interview and you're sitting there, you know, in the room and they separate people that have a master's degree from people that have a bachelor's degree. And I remember looking at the people with the master's degree, like all leaving the room ahead of us to get, because they obviously got, like, preferential thing because they had an advanced degree. And I'm like, oh, I never want to be one
Isn't
of those
that
people.
Isn't awful, the way they do that? Is this as if you are of lesser value, you know?
Well, yeah, but it was, you know, at that point, it was also kind of a good, like, little learning thing because I was, you know, I think I was, like, 20, 21 at the time. And
mm-hmm.
I was like, you know, I don't want to be held back or not put into, like, the preferential category because of
so
a degree.
So I'm going to get that degree, huh?
Right. And at that point, I
yeah.
didn't want to go back to school. But a year later, I was like, all right, I'm going to go back to school. But I want to get it in something that I'm really interested in. And I
right.
was always
mm-hmm.
fascinated with criminal justice. It's such an interesting field because it
Definitely.
Encompasses so many different things. You know, it's part
mm-hmm.
psychology, part law, sociology, like all different types of things. And so I got my master's degree in that field. And it wasn't something I was like, oh, I'm going to work in criminal justice. I'm like, yeah, I'll
yeah.
figure that out later. But I want this degree.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
yeah,
were you able to put that to use before Project Smile came along, or was it just
well,
you know,
it was, I was in
more knowledge based?
It's you know, I was when I started Project Smile, I was working at the school department and I was going to school part time. So it all kind of
okay.
happened at the same time.
Yeah.
So I never, you know, had the opportunity to work in the criminal justice field, per se. So.
Mm-hmm. But I imagine if you walk into those police departments initially or you go to a new area, I mean, and you say, oh, this is my background, you know, instant credibility or more respect instead of them saying, oh, here's this person, you know, with an English degree. So if you mention that somewhere in the conversation, I imagine, you know, there's a rapport built there. You know, but I also saw in some of the background that I read, you're the recipient of some awards, aren't you? Can you tell us about some of the awards that you've won? Hello? Are you there? Kim is our guest there?
Let's see. Something happened. Oh, Catherine, there you... Hello?
Did we drop
here.
You? Catherine,
yeah,
you're
cut off.
Oh, okay. Are you there now? Okay.
I'm here.
Great. Oh, okay. I was like, oh, my goodness. I wonder what happened.
I don't know. It just cut out.
I don't know. Well, I guess you got to stay in one place with you if you're using your cell phone. Or
no, I'm on a landline.
Here. Oh, you are? Okay. Well, I don't know what happened then.
Did you hear Donna's question? Could you hear her? No?
No, it went all static.
I was just
and then
talking
it cut off.
About... Yeah, I'm sorry, then. A little technical error there. It happens in radio occasionally, doesn't it, Kim?
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does. Sometimes more often than not. I was just kind of talking about the fact that when you meet a law enforcement for the first time in a new area, the fact that you have criminal justice in your background, that would be good for rapport building, I would think. And especially if you're going in and trying to present this as a new program and or asking them to help with fundraising. But then I also have seen in doing some of the background that I did on you, you are the recipient of a few awards yourself, aren't you? Can you tell us about that aspect?
Yes.
If you don't want to brag about yourself, I'll brag about you.
How about that? I mean, we've been lucky, and we got some lovely recognition from the Celtics as a recipient of one
Celtics,
of their awards.
The Boston Celtics?
Yes, it
Very
was quite
cool.
exciting.
Wow.
Would they give you an autographed ball or something?
No, but they bring you to, it's called the Heroes Among Us program, which, I mean, I am not a hero, but they have the
but
program.
They think you
and,
are.
Well,
uh-huh.
thank you, but I'm not, but... you know, just one person trying to make a difference. But the it was absolutely amazing. I went to a game and they march you out onto the center court during one of the
I saw the video.
Yeah, one of the breaks. I think it was the second quarter, and you come out there and then they talk about in front of everybody about Project Smile. You hear it over the loudspeaker and you're standing there and then everybody starts to clap. It was very surreal. It was amazing. One of those things that you kind of remember for the rest of your life.
That's great.
So thank you. It was wonderful.
Hey, you know, in this economy, I don't know about, I think Mass and Connecticut are pretty much hand in hand in terms of we are really lagging behind in terms of a much slower economic recovery. At least I get some of your news and vice versa. How is that impacting your overall business? How is it impacting? I'm thinking that in terms of the kids and the number of problems and the increase in crime and whatnot, that this is making things busier for you. It's making it harder because people don't have the money to give to charities and nonprofits, et cetera. Can you talk about that aspect a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's been proven that, you know, in times of like, during economic downturns that that rates of like domestic violence surge during that because of the extra stresses and stuff like that. And the need is always, if it's great for the items and the outreach that we do to help children. And yeah, the fundraising is definitely a challenge. I mean, a couple of years ago when things were even worse, it was more difficult, but I think the rebound is very slow. I mean, there's definitely economic sectors that are coming back very strongly and doing well. But I think, for a lot of people, like average families and stuff, it's still hard, And so when we do, our silent auctions and stuff, people don't necessarily have a lot of money to give to charity. Some people do, some people, it's wonderful. They do have a lot of money.
People
I think,
means, yeah.
Right, yeah, and that's obviously fantastic, but I think, for a lot of people, it's still tough, with gas prices and unemployment, although it's coming down, it's still high, and people that are, if they're employed, they're not making what they used to make, so
right.
That's a challenge in itself,
Mm-hmm.
Right. So with your particular fundraisers that you have, like there's one that I saw that has to do with dating, and then
yes.
I think there's one, your most recent one. Can you talk about, in specific, about the fundraisers that you have done that in the past and you continue to do, and, you know, how successful are they, and tell us the details. And, of course, we want people to maybe be able to donate or be interested, especially if they're in our region and maybe attend and participate. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, definitely. So we have two big fall fundraisers every year where a lot of our money comes from, and one of them is the dating one you talked about. We have an annual charity date auction where we auction off, like a bachelor and bachelorette auction, and we auction off dates with 40 of the Boston area's most eligible single police, firefighters, and other men and women. So we auction 20 guys and 20 ladies, and it's an awesome event. We have it at a really nice nightclub in Boston, and we usually have radio personalities or newscasters that host it. This year we have, her name is Melissa, she's one of the DJs on one of the new 96.9 FM out of Boston. She's going to co-host along with Michael Winter, who's a huge nightlife personality in Boston. And we have 500 people that come to the event, and it's a fantastic fundraiser.
Oh,
we actually had a couple that got married from the event.
Really? Oh, now, yeah. What do you mean they bid on being the bachelor and bachelorette to participate?
Yeah, they were actually.
Tell me how that works.
Yeah, so they were actually both being auctioned off, and then she liked him, and so she decided she was going to bid on a date with him, and she won the date with him, and they, you know, started going out, and they got married. I think it was maybe 2 years later. And they had their first baby. Yeah, they had their first baby in 2011.
Did they do a big media expose on that? I mean, that's terrific.
Yeah, it's on our website. It's on, you know, on the marketing materials for the event and stuff. And yeah, so it's pretty cool, you know.
That is very neat.
Yeah, you know, we're ready for another marriage, so you never know, you know.
You never know.
And did you give them a few stuffed animals as gifts?
Hell no, they're happy. They don't need stuffed animals, right?
Oh, I see.
Unless the marriage goes badly, then, you know, maybe.
Yeah, then they're going to call you back for those stuffed animals, right, Catherine? Oh, my goodness. Now, what's the other fundraiser? And this is another one that you're planning for right now, too?
Yeah, so we have, in April 25th, we have a spring fashion show at Copley Place, which is a beautiful mall right in downtown Boston. And
that's coming up in what is that, like 2 weeks? Let's see, today is the 6th. So
it is
two and a half weeks,
April 25th, yes.
All right, so tell us, what are the details about that?
Sure. It's so I run a social organization for women that love shoes and fashion, and it's called the Smiling Stiletto Shoe Club, and it's a free organization. Yeah, and we have 2,700 members in the greater Boston area. And so we get together every month for, like, cocktail parties and shopping events and all sorts of fun things. And then we have a annual fashion show at Copley Place. And it's an opportunity for some of the retailers in Copley to, you know, show off their latest fashions. And then we have the members of the shoe club are the models. And then we bring in a whole bunch of appetizers. We have different food and beverage vendors that come in. So we have appetizers. We have desserts. We have complimentary cocktails, soda. It's a wonderful event. And then Copley Place does gift bags for everybody. And this time we have Jackie Bruno, who's New England Cable News anchor and reporter. She's going to be hosting.
I've heard that name. Yeah.
Yeah, she's terrific. We're super excited to have her host. And yeah, the ticket is only $20, so it's a very affordable, you know, night out. And the proceeds, almost all the proceeds go to Project Smile, and a small percentage go to the Simon Youth Foundation, which is the Copley Place. It's a Simon Mall, so it's their, you know, official charity.
Uh-huh.
So it helps. Yeah. So we're really excited for that event. We have 120 people it sells out at. So it usually sells out. And it's great. You know, it's a small fundraiser, but it's also, you know, it helps raise awareness. And it's a great night as well.
Mm-hmm. What's the shoe club about?
It is fun. It's
kidding.
Yeah, so the shoe club, it's smilingstiletto.com is the website, and it's free to join.
Smilingstiletto.com. Now, is this something that you run in conjunction with Project Smile, or is that just purely social on your part?
I mean,
something
it is,
else?
Right. It's purely, I mean, it's for, the primary purpose is social, but also it helps raise awareness and raise funds for Project Smile, you know, where it's appropriate, like with a fashion show, that money
okay.
goes to Project Smile. When we have vendors
yeah.
that come in to events that we have for the shoe club, then the vendor fee goes to Project Smile directly. And it also, you know, it helps raise awareness and stuff. So it's separate, but it's also tied in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah,
Jim,
also,
I think you should start one in Milwaukee.
Yeah. Yeah.
You should. Yeah.
Would that be fun?
Yeah, it's awesome. And the idea was, you know, I was a, it was formerly known as the Hello Stiletto Shoe Club. And I had read about it, it was like 7 years ago. And it was a woman named Melissa started it. And it was just the idea of getting girls together that love shoes and fashion, but they didn't necessarily have anywhere to wear their really cute shoes to. You know,
yeah.
And so they would get together for like go out for cocktails and get dressed up with their cute shoes. And then it just took off and people like word of mouth wanted to join. And then it grew and grew. And the Boston Globe had a great article about it years ago. And I read the article mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, this is so much fun. I want to go. So
yeah.
I went to an event and I got hooked and I kept going. And eventually a few years ago, the lady that Melissa, she moved to Atlanta. And then I took over running the events up in Boston. And then she was like, yeah, you know, give it a new name, give it a new website and all that. And that's where the Smiling Stiletto name came from.
Wow.
And it's just, you know, it keeps growing and it's fun. It's a, you know,
now,
I love to do fashion
that,
as well. So.
During that fashion night, are they perpetually like changing pairs of shoes throughout the whole night or are they just
no,
come
it's
and bring their
fun.
Favorite?
Yeah, it's usually, you know, the woman turn up with their, you know, their cute shoes on the guests. And then we do, it's called a shoe walk-off. So since we have the stage set up for the fashion show, the girls have an opportunity to walk on stage. You know, it's like your moment to, like, walk the catwalk.
Like the runway? Uh-huh.
Exactly. Yeah, and show off
oh.
your shoes. And then there's prizes. Cosplay usually gets some awesome prizes for the best shoes. So
right.
And then
wow.
Jackie will help judge the shoe contest. It's a lot of fun.
Well, Kim,
yeah.
I think we should do this as a fundraiser for events for CrimeWire and Imagine Publicity and all that. I think
oh,
we need to
yeah.
do this.
That
you
would
know,
be
that
so
would,
much fun.
That would be very cool. Catherine, we didn't talk too much about your overarching global goal here, and that's what mm-hmm. I want to do. We have about, I don't know,
We have 7 minutes.
We have 7 minutes. It's just kind of flown by here. Your goal, or at least initially when you set it up, it says, is to provide all emergency responders throughout New England and eventually throughout the nation with a continual supply of comfort items to ease the pain and fear of traumatized children. So
yeah.
How are you doing with that goal?
Right now we're at 184 police and fire departments. Most of those, the vast majority, are in New England. We have some, you know, out of New England as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, to be perfectly honest, we're a long way from that goal.
From nation, right.
Right, you know, but it's
but
a work in progress.
If a police department, we have a lot of first responders with our colleagues, if they're interested mm-hmm. in signing on and being a recipient, how do they,
right.
I mean, in terms of doing that, how do? Can you tell us how they do that? You know,
right.
I know you have a website. Okay.
Yeah, it's very simple. Just go on our website, you know, send me an email. You know, obviously let me know what department you're from, you know, and if it's not something that's in driving distance, then we can, you know, mail them out. It's a very simple process. You know, they don't pay for anything. It's kind of like a no-brainer.
Okay, so it all comes from you. All the shipping, they don't have to pay for shipping and handling. They don't have to drive up to
right.
your warehouse,
right.
nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nope.
Wow.
No,
well, I think everybody
nice.
Should take advantage of this then, you know, because it fulfills such a need. And, you know, when you give these to the children or if they go from foster home to foster home or a shelter, they get to take them, you know, it's not just while they're temporarily in this particular placement, right? They just take them and keep them.
Right.
Isn't
exactly,
that so?
Yeah. Yeah, we don't
unless,
want to rip it away from the kids,
no,
right?
No. Are you involved with Boston Children's Hospital?
No, we don't work with the hospitals because a lot of, you know, hospitals already have a lot of items
have that.
For children.
I see.
So we prefer to focus on where the need is greater and on those
right.
emergency situations, you know, so it's like the first time that somebody interacts with a child is that they have something to give to that child right then.
Right. So your focus is giving it to the first responders so they can dole them out on an individual basis. Is that right? Or are you looking for new venues?
No, we're not looking for new venues. We're looking to focus, you know, where we're already working and just work with more departments, but not...
And work with more police and... Okay, so when you say
and,
that, you know,
and
that
more homeless shelters. What?
And more homeless shelters, police departments, fire departments, and EMT ambulance, too?
Yeah, we have done some of the ambulance companies as well, but, you know, I mean, there's so many out there, so we're doing our best to get to as many as we can. It's just, you know... time and resources and stuff, and
right.
the fact that it's only just me, you know.
Right, I understand that. But in terms of who would be eligible and who would be interested, all of the categories
department.
Would be included.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's very good.
Mm-hmm.
Have you given your contact information in terms of if someone's listening and they want to know how to set up a chapter, or they want to email you? Did you give us that information? Can you give it again?
Yeah, so the website is projectsmile.org.
Okay.
And it's probably easier to go directly on there. Yep.
If they had a question, can they call you?
Yeah, sure. It's 508-634-0203.
Okay, that's good. What are your... what's your greatest need and your greatest challenge right now so that people listening, you know, if they're so inclined or if they just want to send some money or they want to purchase some toys online, is that something they can do too?
Definitely. I mean, the financial need is the greatest because, you know, as much love as one has for what they do, you need the money to keep it going and keep growing, keep doing the outreach. So, yeah, the money is absolutely the greatest need because then that keeps everything going, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's
right.
Again on that. That's again. They can do that from Aid Matrix on your website.
Yeah, Aid Matrix.
Is that right?
They can, you know, send a check. You know, if they're more comfortable doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Those are pretty much. And there's a PayPal link on there, but those are the easiest options.
That's what I was going to say. There is a PayPal option on there, right?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Very good. What advice would you offer people who are listening, who perhaps have this aspiration, or, you know, if they see a real need in their neighborhood, but maybe they're not really equipped, can you at least give them advice as to somebody else in their region that they might want to talk to? I mean, can you kind of hook them up if they're not in your area?
Yeah, I mean, as much as, you know, as I can help, I'd be happy to. I think just generally speaking, if somebody does have an idea for a charity they want to start or a service they want to provide, is to just to go for it and to start small. And that's the most important thing is, you know, start in a small way because, you know, you can only do what you can do kind of thing. You have to be, you know, start out small, like, you know, I do with Project Smile, and keep working at it and be happy with, like, baby steps. You know, I think, you know, especially today with everything that's very instant, and people expect instant results. You know, you can go online and find an answer to your question within seconds, you know? And so I think you kind of, your brain becomes kind of trained to be like, oh, I want this to happen right now. And the thing is, like, when you're starting any business, or, you know, charity, nonprofit, service, whatever it is it takes a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be very patient and willing. Like, I always think of it as like baby steps. You know, you have to have, some sort of a plan, but you have to be content with, like, little bits of progress, and then that kind of, you know, things grow, and then you'll get hopefully, like, you know, a break that will help, you know, propel things. But it is just a question of, you know, working hard and being patient. There's no, like, magical cure. You know, it's great if you have a lot of business connections and, you know, access to people that want to help support you.
We understand. There's a lot of trials and tribulations, I imagine. Being set up with Better Business Bureau is good too, and all of that. So we're going to have to sign off for now, though. So I want to say, Catherine. Okay, I'll speak to you off air if you like. Thank you so much for this hour, and it was very informative. We will do our blog tomorrow and have our podcast, and it'll be on the archives. Again, thank you so much, Catherine. And that's another episode of Shattered Life. Thank you so much, Kim Colton. I'll talk to you later, and tune in next week for another episode of Shattered Lives. Please go to www.donnagore.com as well. So good evening.
Good evening. Goodbye.
Thank you,
Catherine.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you later. Good night, everyone. Have a nice weekend.
Good night.
Okay, good night.